Universalists traditionally didn't believe in hell, and we still don't. But when I was young, I can say that I did experience hell, well, sort of, in the form of a road trip my family took. Now, road trips were hard enough under the best of circumstances. My brother and I were always locked in a constant battle for who claimed the center section of the back seat. Who knew that was such important property, right? Being younger, I routinely lost that battle. While my mother napped endlessly, though I always suspected she just kept her eyes closed so she didn't have to weigh in on our backseat arguments, my father would drive for marathon lengths, country music blaring through our car speakers. I didn't like country music, so road trips were painful in multiple ways. And there we were, on our great American summer holiday, driving from Indiana to Wyoming. The intention to be to see the great American countryside through our car windows, to experience Illinois and Iowa and South Dakota and Nebraska and Kansas along the way. And somewhere in Kansas, on those flat, endless stretches of road with nowhere to stop and nothing to see, we lost our minds. By this point, my brother and I had lost interest in everything, even fighting. My mother's eternal nap, whether genuine or faked, had finally ended, leaving her wide awake and jittery. And my father couldn't even get one single country music station on the car radio. If there were something to be on edge about, we found it. If something had gotten on our nerves before we left on that trip, it now rested heavily and pointedly on those very same nerves. That day, the road stretched out in front of us. Nowhere to stop, nowhere to eat, nowhere to remind ourselves what it felt like to be a human being who could stand upright and take a breath. Lunchtime came and went. Not even a gas station had come into sight on that vast, empty prairie. We ate candy bars and warm soda that had been purchased at a motel vending machine the night before. "Don't ever tell anyone I fed you this for lunch," my mother said. "Sorry, Mom." And finally it appeared, a town. I've long forgotten the name, somewhere in that prairie desert of Kansas. Now, when I say town, that's stretching it. It was one long, dusty street, really. And there was one restaurant, a worn-out building that didn't look promising. An Italian place, the name on the sign partially worn off, Luigi's being sloppily painted over with Nancy's Italian restaurant. We all lamented the late Luigi, who sounded much more promising as an Italian chef, and hoped that Nancy had picked up at least a few tips, one or two kitchen tips from him. "Well, it's here or nowhere," my father said, and so we went inside. It was dusk, and the small restaurant with brick walls was dim, lit by the drippy candles in wine bottles that sat on the red checked tablecloths. Nancy herself greeted us, taking one look at our bedraggled selves and saying, "Oh, you poor things. We must have looked that bad." When the food came, it was delicious. The best thing any of us had ever tasted, or so it seemed. And we started to laugh about the day, about the trip, about the endless list of things that had gotten on everyone's nerves all those miles on the road. And we sat there in the glow of candlelight, in the perfect warmth of that space, full of gratitude for the food, which reminded us of what food can be, how it can nourish, how it can delight the senses. Gratitude for the hospitality of the place, for Nancy, who had indeed studied her Uncle Luigi's recipes. And gratitude for each other, a family with all its flaws and strengths, all its love. And that moment, that dinner in that inconsequential town somewhere in a forgotten part of Kansas, transcended just being a meal. It was a moment, more than everyday life, more than we could have expected. And it connected us to a greater sense of love, of gratitude for all that we had, all that we could be, and it brought us back to who we were ourselves, who we were, so that when we faced that long road ahead the next day, we were renewed by this transcendence.
6 weeks after I gave birth to my son, I found out that I had cancer. At a time when a mother should be looking forward to spending time with her new baby, I was worrying about living. 6 weeks, a magical number. Only 6 weeks of bliss with my son, and then I heard those three little words, "You have cancer." Of course, I was in denial. I fought the doctors on treatment recommendations. "I want to have more children," I exclaimed. And they diligently and dutifully showed me the research I demanded. I got another opinion, and the prognosis was the same. If I do as they recommended, there was a 92% chance of survival. It would be tough. I would have to stop breastfeeding. I would react to the medicine in horrific ways, but I would be alive to see my baby boy grow up. "Don't you want that?" they asked. My parents and other family members implored me to listen to the doctors, and after much thoughtfulness, I did. I had to stop breastfeeding overnight. The cries of my baby seemed to mirror my cries of retching stomach pain as I threw up the concoction meant to get me ready for surgery. Little did I know, this would be symbolic of what was to come. After surgery came the recommendation for chemotherapy. We don't know if there has been a minuscule portion of the tumor that dropped and spread through your bloodstream, Dr. Brown told me. So, reluctantly, I agreed. Apparently, young women don't react well to this type of chemo, but I hoped I would be different. I was not. Simultaneous rounds of chemotherapy and radiation left me hardly eating anything most days. I was lucky if I ingested the life-saving miso soup I so loved. My family tried to get me to eat, but nothing would stay down, and chemo days were not fun. That night, I could look forward to nights in the bathroom throwing up anything within my body. And daily radiation left me exhausted as well. I slept most of the day as a result. My baby slept by my side most days, and he was just such a good baby. There were days, though, when I didn't think I would survive the assault on my body. I remember thinking that I should just give up. Why live, I thought? Why continue with this suffering? Why keep torturing myself? And then I heard the soft murmur of cars passing by. The sounds of cars usually made me anxious and frustrated in our extremely busy neighborhood. But that day, they were a welcome noise. At that moment, I realized that life was continuing. At that moment, I realized that the world was alive. It was like a distant call to me to live, to affirm life and continue to fight to witness the growth of my baby boy. That day was like a miracle. I decided that day to live, no matter what, transcending the feelings of suffering encountered from a deadly illness.
The air was filled with electricity. There was a strange sort of silence The proverbial silence before the storm that seemed to produce its own sound, like a hum or a buzz. My family still lived in the house on Oakwood Trail, a spooky, rambling colonial nestled amidst overgrown elderberry bushes. So I know I couldn't have been more than 6 or 7. It was early October, but we already had a carved, grinning pumpkin holding court on our front porch. I knew a storm was coming, a doozy of a storm, as my great-grandmother used to say, one that would tear the fall colors from the trees and beat the earth with a relentless downpour. And I wanted to be caught in that storm. I stood there in the far corner of the front lawn, feeling the energy of that coming storm all around me. The sky had turned some sort of unnatural shade of purple, and it was both dark and light at once. I could feel the change in the air, and I was aware of the natural world around me in a way I'd never been before. The wriggling of earthworms, the trembling blades of grass, the earnest trees that seemed to dig their roots into the earth a little more securely in expectation of the deluge. I knew my mother was due soon to come out to that front porch and call for me to come in, but I didn't want her to. I wanted to get caught in the excitement of that coming storm, to feel the rain on my skin, to be part of it. Because this wasn't just a moment outside in our front yard. It was something else, something beyond the everyday, even though it was part of the everyday natural world. It was an awareness of all that I was part of. It was a knowledge of the power of nature. It was what I imagined, if there were such a thing, as the breath of God. And then the storm broke loose, and I felt the first drops of cold water pelting my skin. And there was my mother at the door calling me inside, and I knew I couldn't stay because how could I explain? And 30-some years went by, and not too long ago, I found myself at the lowest point in my life I could remember. I'd been betrayed by someone I thought I had trusted. My whole life, career were on the line, not to mention the faith I had committed myself to, and I went for a walk in Orange County, California, thousands of miles and a few decades away from that other moment in time. And this time the storm broke loose with no warning, or perhaps I was too preoccupied with the concerns of adulthood to notice, but there I was in a park, still 3 miles from home, and the rains were pouring like they almost never do here. And I was bathed in them in a way, soaked to my skin with that cold rain, pummeled and washed by that rain, until my troubles no longer consume me. Being caught in the downpour like this was what I'd wanted to be all those years before, and those two moments in time connected together in that instant to become one moment, a moment of communion with nature, the power of nature, that transcended my troubles, transcended all that had gone wrong, that washed away all my disillusion and bitterness and reconnected me with my child self, standing there eagerly anticipating the coming storm. And I emerged from this downpour of transcendence purified, sanctified, baptized.
It was one of those weeks, one of those days, and I didn't feel like going to Sunday services. How many have been there? Go, my mom said. You'll feel better. I didn't expect that I would feel better, but I certainly felt an obligation to be there. See, we had a little band going at the church, and I was the drummer. I knew that it was appreciated by many, so I got myself ready and went to services. Have you ever had a moment when music spoke to you? Maybe it's the melody or the words or the way someone sings like a chorus of angels harmonizing with the universe. Whatever it is a time in which you can be transported to another world. This was one of those days. And when I started playing the drum to whatever songs were selected, I immediately started to feel better. Then came the song that made tears fall from my eyes. How could anyone ever tell you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving was a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. I had been told I was less than beautiful before. I had again experienced those awful words that very week. So I needed... Yes, I needed this song to lift me up. And as I sat drumming to this tune, the tears started streaming down my face. And I felt something magical in the air, in the music, in the song that we, a beloved community, all sang together and to one another, looking into the eyes of others, as our music director directed us to do. And then I saw my son, not a baby anymore. And I wept for his innocence and the cruelties that he would embark upon in our society someday. But for today, this beloved child that I had fought cancer to see grow up would hear the magical words and melody affirming his worth. And I looked at him and sang to him directly. This experience with music, my emotions opening up, that feeling of release of pain within my heart, this experience reminded me of when I would drum with my late father as a teenager. Growing up with him, a phenomenal musician, singing the enchanting songs of his homeland, listening to this gorgeous music that took me to another world I knew, transcendence. See, there was always a moment when I would know that I had transcended the pains of my heart, the memories of painful childhood experiences that would come rushing in when I least expected them. And then there was playing music to rescue me from that suffering. As I would play the hypnotic beats over and over again, I would go into a trance-like state, playing the drum but not really feeling what I was doing. The memories disappearing, the pain gone. And then I would be back, sitting on a stage, playing the drums for hundreds of people, but feeling more at peace, as if I transcended those feelings of shame and heartbreak as a response to difficult memories that had enveloped my soul with horrid words and experiences from my past. The drum, my tool for transcending difficult feelings when I was growing up. The drum, my rescuer. And so, as I played the drum in that sanctuary that day, gazing at my young child, thinking about how he too would need to find his tool for transcendence. I began to weep for humanity, for Mother Earth, for how we hurt one another, and I pledged that I would do my best to help this beautiful spirit find his way and transcend difficult memories in his own life. We all need something to help us when we can't find our way, because we are all beautiful. We are all whole. And our loving is a miracle, no matter what they say.
Life is made of moments that can be described as imminent, meaning they can be understood practically, scientifically, objectively. Yet humanity has always searched for that which is transcendent, something that exemplifies a connection to a larger whole, that awakens our sense of wonder and mystery, that fills us with sometimes inexplicable hope and possibility. In Unitarian history, the transcendentalist movement of the 19th century was a reaction against the dry intellectual abstractions of early Unitarian preaching. Ralph Waldo Emerson's 1838 Harvard Divinity School address shocked his audience with radical claims that intuition was more reliable than religious doctrine, that all humans have a divine nature, and that scripture didn't supersede firsthand revelation. Transcendentalism emphasizes lived experience, the here and now, the natural world, the imminent, but it emphasizes the transcendent qualities, the everyday miracles of this reality. Unitarian Universalism continues to this day to develop in the interplay between what Reverend Meredith Gammon calls the truths of reason and the truths of poetry. Truths of reason can be found in the insights of natural and social sciences, while truths of poetry are to be found when we experience an overwhelming but ineffable sense of connection infused with mystery, awe, wonder. Each of the moments that Reverend Summer and I have explored in our own lives, well, they have no great meaning when looked at objectively. My family ate some Italian food in Kansas. Reverend Summer heard some traffic noise while undergoing chemotherapy. I got caught in the rain. Reverend Summer played the drums. Yet each of those moments impacted our lives in ways that words cannot fully describe. Each of them reconnected us with places of gratitude and wholeness, gave us reasons to carry on, to find hope amidst seemingly impossible circumstances. Our experience of these moments transcended their facts. Our invitation to each of you today is to open up your hearts, your minds, to that which is transcendent in your own lives, to recognize that our great Unitarian Universalist tradition invites us to not only use our rationality and logic, but also to cultivate our sense of intuition, mystery, and wonder. May you too find and recognize the transcendent moments of your lives, and may you too be renewed by them.